Hi there, I'm Rima, and you're listening to Chatter and Laughs. I started this podcast because I felt like everyone I know has something valuable to say, and I wanted to share that. So this is about reconnecting with friends, meeting some new ones perhaps, and sharing the insight along the way. Thank you for listening. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the last episode of 2023. I'm excited to have Katie Mead on the podcast today. Katie and I met a year or so ago. We were seated beside each other at a conference, and we've stayed connected ever since then. I always knew I was going to have her on the podcast at some point, and here we are. Katie is a registered psychotherapist who has been practicing for over 5 years. Her focus is on supporting teens, their parents, and families, as well as helping individuals of all ages with a variety of conditions, from anxiety and depression to low self-esteem and relationship problems. Welcome to Chatter and Laughs, Katie.
Ah, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
So tell us about your journey. I think the listeners are going to be surprised to hear what you were doing prior to psychotherapy.
Yeah, what's interesting, I think, is that this is actually my third career. So my initial one was as an opera singer. I went to music school right out of high school, opera school. And I sang professionally for 10 years.
I find that so cool. I mean, you don't hear about people being opera singers. Did you always want to be an opera singer at first when you were younger? Like, was that always something you wanted to do? Or was it just music sort of that was the direction you wanted to take?
Well, I always wanted to be a singer, and then I was actually, doing pre-law, and then I realized that I was not sort of being true to myself. So I called my mom up at 11 o'clock at night and told her I was quitting law school and going to opera school instead. No, I had a really great singing teacher, so I always sang when I was a kid, and I had this amazing singing teacher, and of course, I'll date myself by saying this, I wanted to sing like Whitney Houston or something, and she...
It was the best.
Right. And mm-hmm. She insisted that I learn to sing properly. And I was hooked.
Wow. So what made you transition and decide to move away from opera singing to psychotherapy? I mean, it's such a contrast, or so it seems, but maybe it's not so much.
Yeah. I mean, there was an interim piece there as well. I did some businessy type stuff in the middle. But the challenge for me was always trying to figure out a way to integrate both science and art. I was always interested in both. And I look at something like therapy as sort of that perfect marriage between science and art. And then you kind of sprinkle in a little bit of magic as well. So it actually does, certainly from where I'm sitting, seem like a bit of an evolution.
Right. Yeah. And so do you find that your background in opera and music contributes to your current practice in ways that you didn't expect it to?
Yes, I do. The type of therapy that I practice is called Gestalt, and it's just an approach or a modality. But one of the things that sets it apart from different types of therapy is the emphasis on an integration of body and mind, right? So we sort of, look at it from the perspective that our bodies hold huge amounts of information. If you think about trauma or anxiety, they all have a physical component.
Yeah.
And so if you think about performing on the stage as an opera singer, I mean, that's definitely an integration of body and mind. Mm-hmm. So learning how to, really listen to your body has sort of shown up differently in therapy, but definitely there's a connection. I find
that,
anyway.
That's so interesting. So tell me about the focus of your therapy. I know that you focus on teens as well as, the parents and adults. Originally, I thought that your initial focus was on teens, but I'm realizing now that actually it was initially not the focus on teens. It was on adults, and then it evolved. So tell me about that niche group and why it has evolved to this practice, I guess.
Absolutely. I mean, I have to mention the fact that I have a son who will be 18 in March. So he has been along with me for this sort of, foray into teenagehood or whatever. But all of that being said, I just find that I really connect to teenagers. I love how honest they are. I love how direct they can be. I love how intentional they seem to be around, how they want to show up in the world and really want to, do better and do good and all the rest of that. And then I made a joke earlier that it's a little bit of world domination as well, because, you make sure the kids are all right and then you send them off into the world. Imagine the change that they can create.
You know, it is interesting that you say that, because I do tend to look back sometimes on myself as a teen, mm-hmm. or as an mm-hmm. or as a young adult, and think about how passionate I was at that time in my life, and Absolutely. How sure of myself in some ways, more so than I am now. And
right,
you kind of look back and you think, wow, you know, it was there's just so much mobilization going on. Like, they have this energy, right? Which
they do.
It's refreshing to see, for sure. And to think back on as well. Okay, I know we're gonna sort of switch gears here a little bit, and we're gonna talk about some stats, some alarming stats out there that I'm yep. sure you won't that won't surprise you regarding youth and mental health. Yep. So for the next several questions, I want to highlight some of these stats and have a discussion around them, including the topic of social media and teens, which we'll get into as well. So ready?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Okay, so the Canadian Pediatric Society says that 20% of Canadian children and youth will experience mental health. In 2020, Kids Help Phone reported twice as many interactions across Canada compared to 2019. And the Children and Youth Mental Health Association says nearly 1 in 4 hospitalizations from children and youth aged 5 to 24 were for mental health conditions in 2020. So I know COVID for sure has contributed to all of this, but yes. it seems when, you know, we talked about making the kids okay, but it seems when you look at these stats, the kids are not okay. Yes. What are your thoughts? I'm interested to hear your feedback on the increase of youth mental health in Canada and whether you've seen that uptick in your own practice.
Yes. So dealing with teens, interestingly, seems to be a bit of a niche. I don't have a lot of colleagues who are choosing to work in that demographic. Mm-hmm. So I'm very busy, and I've seen, I mean, I don't even know if you consider it an uptick, but it's just consistently busy. There used to be seasons and there aren't now, right? Yeah. I used to think, oh, summer is kind of a downtime or whatever. It's not at all. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a combination of a lot of different things. We are still really recovering. They are still recovering from COVID. I mean, there's science now really to indicate that it was like a collective trauma, right? It mm-hmm. affected children's brains in that same way. And what I find really interesting is that it's really sort of micro, right? I mean, depending on the year they were born and where they were in their development when COVID happened. So, you know, kids my son's age who are now graduating high school have a very different sort of affect than the kids who were 4 or 5 years younger than they were, right? So it just impacted all different things. I don't think that COVID, well, I believe, I know really, that COVID did not create this problem. Mm. I think it's been simmering for a long time, to be honest. I think COVID has really shone a light on what the need is. And I think we're seeing that in so many different areas. I mean, the healthcare system in general, I think that we're starting to see the crack, right?
Right.
Yeah, I think that what I'm noticing is that, you know, and I'm making huge generalizations, obviously, but, you know, the kids that I'm working with are so good at advocating for themselves. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm really interested in, right? That sort of sets them apart from perhaps different generations. And I do think that social media has had a positive impact in mm-hmm. a way to mm-hmm. sort of let them understand. Yeah, the other thing too is, you know, I sometimes talk to parents who, you know, kind of grew up in the 90s right. and they feel a little bit, you know, in Canada, and they mm-hmm. feel a little bit, you know, confused by some of the challenges that their kids are facing. And they're like, wow, it wasn't like this when I was a kid.
Right.
No, it wasn't. It really wasn't. You
it was a different world. So it was just world.
It was. And there, I mean, think about being 17 or 18 or graduating university right now and look at what's facing you. So there are a lot of, it's very relational. I think it's very contextual as well. Mm-hmm. And what I notice is that kids are really aware. They're more aware than, say, I was when I was growing up in the 90s of, you know, what was going around me and, you know, throughout the world and everything else. So mm-hmm. it's a complicated combination of factors.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot. There's a lot that kids are managing and processing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you bring up a good point about just them being more aware and actually advocating for themselves and actually, you know, asking for the help. Whereas I think, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, we didn't encompass mental health as part of our physical health in any sort of way. Right. In terms of going to a doctor or how do I feel? We never really necessarily associated that feeling in terms to, in, you know, connecting it to how do we feel. Whereas I see your point where kids nowadays and teenagers nowadays they understand that connection way better than we ever did. And that's through education for sure. So yeah, I guess that is good. At least they're willing to understand that they need it and that they can ask for it more. So mm-hmm. another interesting stat. Oh, I don't know if you wanted to comment on that or
no,
I'll just keep going.
There was just a couple of things. I just wanted to add. I mean, one is that there still is, depending on who you talk to, there is mm-hmm. still a stigma. Although I think that we've come a long way as a society around processing that and thinking about it differently. But the other thing that I want to say is that what I've noticed increasingly is, you know, some kids come to me when they're in crisis, absolutely. But increasingly, there are others. There's a large contingent who are starting to see mental health in a proactive mm-hmm. light. Just mm-hmm. like we would, like you go to the doctor once a year to get your, right. you know, your physical, just in case, just to, you know, keep on top of things.
Yeah.
And what I love about this particular demographic is that a lot of it is talking about different strategies and, you know, different ways to support themselves. And I mean, if I had learned some of that stuff when I was 15, as opposed to waiting till I was 40 or mm-hmm. whatever, you mm-hmm. know, that it really just gives you so much more autonomy and the ability to really keep yourself healthy.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So that's a significant shift, I think.
Yeah. Another interesting stat from Stats Canada is that more than half of youth aged 12 to 17 viewed their mental health differently than their parents did, and nearly 2/3 rated it less positively than their parents did. Do you think that has to do with them being more aware as children than the parents were, or are we... What are your thoughts on the lack of awareness from parents? Any tips on how we as parents can work on that? Because it's not always easy to speak to tweens and teens and get them to open up or even know what's going on with them.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And that is part of the challenge for sure. I think there are a lot of factors, again, that contribute to that shift. I think that, I'll speak from my personal experience, both myself personally as a mom, mm-hmm. but also, mm-hmm. you know, professionally working with this demographic, I think one of the best thing we can do, really, the best thing we can do as parents is listen, mm-hmm. listen. Because there's a lot of fear for parents as well. You know, if you have a kid who comes to you and says, I'm super depressed or I need help, you know, I think that many of us go right into overdrive, like, oh my gosh, how can I fix it? How can I solve
right,
it? What's the
right.
solution? You know, and sometimes when we are ourselves anxious and concerned, it makes it really hard to hear what our children are saying to us. So I would say if you have a teen or a tween or a child of any age, really, who's talking to you about their mental health, listen, because they don't have the world experience and life experience that we do, but they do know themselves, you know, mm-hmm. and I think that if we can, you know, clearly get sort of curious about what it is they're trying to share with us and really listen to what they have to say, that's the best step. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that as parents, we tend to want to jump in too quickly mm-hmm. probably and solve
yep.
something that maybe we think is the issue, but isn't, you know, and so really just stopping is hard and just waiting and listening. That's really good advice.
You know, and remembering as well that especially for teenagers, you know, there's that whole sort of, you know, child development stage where at a certain point they really do start moving away from the family being their focus and their friends being their focus. And at that point, you know, they've got this rich internal emotional landscape that's quite frankly, often has nothing to do with their parents.
Right.
So, you know, when they're 6 and they're sad or upset, you know, you can probably fix it, whatever it is.
Yes.
But
yeah.
when they're 12, 15, 17, it's probably not about you. So really your job, I think, as a parent shifts and it's about supporting and listening mm-hmm. rather than fixing. Because
right.
really whatever it is that's going on with that teen is something that they have to learn how to manage themselves.
Yeah. No, that's great advice. What, okay, let's talk about this big elephant in the virtual room right now, the social media. Okay, at this point,
absolutely.
I feel like the Canadian Pediatric Society is waving this huge red big flag, stating that we're in the midst of a youth mental health crisis, and with numerous studies now emerging about the negative impacts of social media use in school-aged children and adolescents, they're really calling out social media use. Currently, there are 33 U.S. states suing Facebook and Instagram, alleging that Meta has features aimed at teens, despite knowing the harm that they can cause. And I mean, we still don't know the future fully, future impacts. I mean, it's just studies are really now coming out.
Yes.
So I know this is so heavy, but what are your thoughts? I mean, you deal with the teenagers right now. You focus on them. Does any of this surprise you at all? And are there any tips for parents here on how to navigate and manage the world of screens and teens? I ask this because I feel that in some way, until the government and legislation catches up, that might be too late, right? So we almost need to take control of the situation at this point as parents.
I don't know.
You tell me. You're the professional. I don't know what the answer is.
No, this comes up all the time. And again, I mean, I feel like a broken record a little bit. It's really complicated. But that being said, I think there are some sort of generalities to take away. I think it is at this point indisputable, frankly, the harm that social media can do in terms of those brains. I mean, it's like, you know, I don't know, letting your kid gamble. That's not good for their brains.
Right.
Let's have some drinks, right? I mean, we know this.
It's an addiction.
Of course it is.
Just like everything else.
100%. And we know that those have incredibly negative impacts on developing brains. And keep in mind as well that brains are still developing until about 25. Right. Yeah. I mean, my 19-year-olds don't really like to hear that. Fair enough. But but really, they are. Right. So when you mentioned taking control of it, I get that. And I think I know what you're saying. But honestly, from my perspective, I think the best way, the thing that I've seen work the best, the approach that I've seen work best is really a more collaborative approach. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about collaborate with your kid.
Yeah.
Because I do see a lot of parents who, you know, try to restrict, and I understand the intention. I really get it. It just doesn't work. It's not pragmatic, right?
Right.
So, and the thing is, social media, good or bad, I don't think it's going anywhere. Certainly, it's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah.
So, like everything else, I mean, you have to arm your kids with the information. And as parents, you can't afford to be out of the loop,
right?
Like, I don't necessarily enjoy sitting around scrolling TikTok necessarily. Mm-hmm. However, as a parent, you need to know, I think, as much as you can do to learn and like orient yourself to what is going on online, I think is amazingly helpful. And then like any other difficult situation or difficult topic, you talk to your kids about it, right? Mm-hmm. Like they need to know about social media. They need to know about the harms. They need to know about all that kind of stuff. And I think that that's the best way we can sort of inoculate our kids against the harms, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it makes sense. And I know when I said the word control, I didn't even like saying it because it's not that you want to control it or control your children. It's just,
the
struggle is that as they get older, you know, they want this independence and autonomy, but we know now how bad social media is. We know just like how bad drinking is, how bad gambling is. As you said, we know that it's an addiction because we ourselves as adults are addicted to it. So
at one factor,
we want to give them that independence, but at the same time, because they are still technically children, you want to protect them in some way, being the adult. So I guess, you know, what you said about collaborating and maybe together coming up with, you know, helping them understand exactly what the harm is, which I don't think all parents even know, let alone the children, right?
I agree.
So that's the first part. And then the second part maybe being coming up with the boundaries together, like, okay, understanding what the effect is. So what are the boundaries here? Like, you can't really be on social media till 1 a.m. Like, it's just at 12 years old. It's just, it, you know, I don't know. I'm rambling.
No, not at all. Not at all. I think you're totally right. And I mean, you know, to be clear, as the parent, you're still the one making the rules.
Right.
Absolutely.
For sure. But at least you're providing them with some input.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, what I've noticed, especially, you know, by the time it gets to sort of teenage years and maybe this hasn't been addressed or whatever, you know, the horse has really left the barn.
Yeah.
You know, and I do see parents trying desperately to control, not their kid necessarily, but the environment. And it's, you just can't, it's not possible. So really, I mean, the advice I could give to parents, especially when your kids are little, is from as early as possible, really develop that mutual respect back and forth, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, as a parent, you're still the one setting the rules, absolutely, but it's about collaborative buy-in, listening to your kids, helping them understand why, in an age-appropriate way, obviously, right? I mean, you talk about social media differently with an 8-year-old than you would with a 14-year-old, of course. But helping them, just like we do, ideally with alcohol or drugs or whatever else, trying to come up really from like a harm reduction, I think, perspective, because it is everywhere, social media specifically. And like I said, really arming them with the information so that they can develop a healthy relationship to technology, not just social media, technology in general, right? Yeah. And I think that to your point, there is a lot of work for parents to do because, I mean, you know, like I said, I grew up in the 90s. There was no internet. I mean, there was technically, but I didn't use it. You know, so things have happened so quickly. That's the other piece. We can, I think, rely on our kids as kind of subject matter experts in a way. That's part of getting their buy-in, right? I mean, kids connect with their friends in ways that I certainly didn't because it wasn't an option. And understanding as a parent how important those connections are to the kids and how different that is from scrolling TikTok. It's not the same activity, right? Like they hold different, you know. And then the other thing that seems to work really well, if it's possible, is to really engage your kids in like activities together. You know, the surliest 14-year-old, if you really make an effort to like, hey, it's not about, you know, no social media. It's about, hey, we're doing this now.
Right. Know? We're taking a break and we're doing this as a family.
Yeah. We're going to do this together. Like we're going to, I don't know, go have a coffee or we're going to go for a walk or it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're going to do something together. So really engaging, I think, makes that transition easier. And really, from my perspective, maximum health is really about flexibility. Right. So we're not getting stuck. We know what our limits are. We know how to protect ourselves. We know how to stop, like these sorts of things.
Yeah. And I mean, like everything else, I guess it is all about balance. I mean, with everything. Yep. So I think that.
Well, I mean, it is. But at the same time, you know, I think it's fair to say, you know, for me as a parent, I would love it if my son never used social media.
Yeah,
but
me too.
But that's unrealistic. But it's unrealistic. Right. I can't stop him from doing it. So if that's not possible, then I have to teach him how to do it in a healthy way.
Right. Yeah. That's unrealistic. Definitely at 19 for sure. I mean, maybe when the kids are really young, you could try. But definitely we've restricted social media for our 12-year-old, but it doesn't mean that she's not exposed to it. Right.
Of course.
Now, she doesn't have her own Instagram and she doesn't have her Snapchat and TikTok and all of that, but of course she's exposed to it. Right.
Right.
Which we're aware of. But okay, I feel like we could talk about this forever. But I do agree with you on the point that it is about screen time in general too, right? It's not just about the social media. It's about just taking the focus off of that and directing it towards a different connection, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, so I've seen a number of articles regarding the lack of services of youth and mental health in Canada. Okay, and considering the alarming statistics, I mean, you said so yourself, there's no seasons anymore. Like it's constant, it's constantly busy. There's such a huge need. Do you feel that there's more the government can be doing? I know they recently created the 988 suicide line, which I guess for you, it must be a huge step in the right direction. But is it even enough? And we talked about how mental health has to be lumped in now with general health. And that when you look at, you know, certain communities, that's not necessarily affordable for them either. Right.
So I like that you just said that, because to me, yes, I mean, I'm not going to say no to any of the strategies that they're putting in place. I certainly have a professional opinion about efficacy, depending on what we're talking about. I don't think that there is anything that replaces the relationship that a good therapist can create with a client. But to your point, it is cost prohibitive for a lot of people. So unless you have good, you know, private benefits, or you have benefits through your job, you're really stuck sort of back in the general system. And if you have a child who is suicidal, once you go to that initial emergency room visit or whatever, you could be on a wait list that'll take 6 months.
Which is ridiculous.
Well, it's just not very helpful, I don't think. So I don't think that the intention isn't there. I think it is, but you know, I mean, I could make the argument that it's not so different from like dental care. I think that it should be available to everyone.
Yeah, no, but you're right. Absolutely.
So if
you're
right. If we're saying that there really, if we're all acknowledging that there is this crisis in healthcare, mental health care, mm-hmm. which I think, again, is sort of indisputable at this point, then yeah. I think we need to put our money where our mouth is, really, and just have it much more integrated into the social system, I believe, so that it's available to everyone. Because right now it does seem to be, you sort of, it's pretty two-tiered, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, for sure. So, I mean, is there anything else you wanted to add in terms of all these stats? I know they just seem so negative. And as I was listing them, and there's so many, I mean, I could have gone on and on.
I know.
But I just feel like I don't want to, the social media piece alone, right? It can be scary, but at least we're aware of it. We're acknowledging it, you know, moving forward. But
okay. So can I add some levity, or maybe not levity,
yes,
but
some
light anyway into the conversation?
Yes.
Okay. I love it. So I think that this is my opinion, to take with a grain of salt, right? But what I can see, and from my professional perspective, I think that we collectively have a tendency to pathologize difficult emotions. So things like anxiety, things like depression, things, you know, these are not pleasant things to feel, but I charge anyone to look around at certain aspects of the world and not feel some anxiety. There's a right. certain amount that feels pretty normal, right? So I think that one of the best takeaways, honestly, is that with the right support in place, what I see is much of this can be healed. Right. Mm-hmm. You think about the impact from COVID. We are now in a moment, I think, where the awareness is there around what the need is. And we know about the supports. We know what works. We know what can help. We know what, you know, the different, and there are lots of different ways. There's not just one way to do it. Mm-hmm. But we know that we have an array of options available to really help people, help kids, and help kids heal the impact of the trauma from the past, whatever it is, and give them the supports necessary now to move forward in the world. And now they get to choose what kind of adults they become. So what kind of parents they want to be, should they want to have kids, what mm-hmm. kind of, you know, partners they are, what kind of employees or bosses they choose to be. Mm-hmm. And it's not out of our control, right? With the right emphasis and the right commitment and intention, we can make huge change and really support this generation. And then there's just like a cascade effect. Right now it's a little bit negative, but we can turn it around, right?
Right.
So a lot of this is cyclical. A lot of it, like I said, we've got the tools at the moment to really know how to break some of these cycles and help kids move forward differently. And I think that's very exciting, actually.
Yeah. No, definitely. Yes. There is a light. There is a light.
There is.
Absolutely. I mean, it's
right?
not.
But we have to work together.
Of course. And I mean, and part of that is like, you know, being aware of the struggle that is taking place and figuring out, okay, how can we work with this, right? How
Absolutely.
Can we, therapy, of course, being a big aspect of that. And, mm-hmm. you know, maybe putting funds into government funds into that. And yes, of course, like I guess the first step is acknowledging a problem. Am I in a therapy session right now? I feel like I am.
A little bit, right?
A little bit.
No, but then, you know, the other thing too, to continue with the, you know, maybe the hope side of it or whatever.
Yeah.
I am always grateful and kind of amazed by how much I learn from my teen clients as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's accessible to any parent out there, or any adult who loves a child, right? A teenager, a kid, whatever, whether it's your niece, your nephew, your friend, your child, it doesn't matter. They know some stuff, right? Mm-hmm. They don't know the same stuff that we know, fair enough, but they do know some stuff.
They do.
And they see things, big generalization, but they see things at times with a particular clarity that I think sometimes as adults we forget.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the opportunity to really learn, you know, and I think that's exciting as well. So again, it's that reciprocal sort of respect-based relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I
was gonna say, like, this is slightly off topic, but sometimes it's like, you know, when there is a bit of a struggle going on the mental health side of things with your children or with somebody that you know, it's almost like, okay, you want to prescribe them right away. Like, okay, well, that's okay. You're going to go see a therapist. You're going to go see a psychiatrist. They're going to take care of that problem. You're going to do this. That's going to take, you know, doctor is going to take care of this problem. But what I'm understanding from you is it's an ongoing work process, like working together process. It's not really a, you're going to go see someone and they're going to take care of all your problems for you.
No, not at all. So, I mean, I'll speak for the, you know, to the type of therapy that I do, yeah. But really my job is to, it's very relational, right? So my job is to be with my client. So I'm the expert on therapy in the room, mm-hmm. right? But they are the expert on themselves. Right. And so I'm not ever sitting there telling my teen or adult clients, for that matter, how to live their lives. That's not my place, mm-hmm. but it is my place to help them see and help them develop skills that perhaps they hadn't learned. So some of it is skill acquisition, really, it's that basic. But yeah. then, you know, a lot of it as well, especially with teenagers, is simply validation. It's right. validating what they already know, right? Yeah. That they're getting confused about whatever, and helping them develop a sense of stability and ground within themselves. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the distinction would be, you know, you're on a ship in a storm and you're getting tossed around. The difference would be being the captain of that ship. Right. You're still in a storm, you're still being tossed around, but it's very different than being a passenger, right? You feel like you have a little bit of control. And yeah. so helping them develop that skill set, I think, is amazingly important. And I said earlier, for me, for this type of therapy, flexibility equals mental health, right?
Yeah.
So we can't control what happens to us, yeah. but we can develop a flexibility within ourselves and the ability to trust that we can roll with whatever comes, right? And so, you know, teaching kids really young how to do that is a skill set they can carry through the rest of their lives.
Yeah. Teaching them how to have a bit of a flow in them to be able yeah. to adjust and adapt to so
Absolutely.
Many things that are going to happen. Yeah. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Work is so important, yeah. obviously, it's so needed. And I'm sure it can be heavy at times.
Sure.
How do you manage personally with your own mental health and manage to compartmentalize, you know, your work, and how do you manage to keep work at work when you get home? I feel like that can't always be easy. And I know there's many careers out there where people yeah. might struggle with that as well. So maybe you have some input on how you manage it that could help others.
Yeah. That has been a journey for sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can imagine. As I've developed as a therapist. Well, one of the things, I mean, it's very simple. I used to work out of my home. I had a home office, which was great, and it worked really mm-hmm. well, and it was wonderful. I now have an actual dedicated office space that is separate. So that little bit of separation, I think, is very helpful. Okay. Makes it a little bit easier to leave it, you know, kind of in the office. Really paying attention. So really taking my own advice.
Yeah.
Which is sometimes, you know, I've got colleagues and we joke about this. You know, we're often the worst at taking our own advice.
Yeah.
But listening to my body. So I will notice after a long day, I'll typically get quite tense, right? And if I can pay attention to my body, I notice the tension, and it's just an indicator that I need to go and do something for myself.
Yeah.
So exercise is essential. I mean, the physical aspect is great, but really in terms of stress reduction, it's really important.
Yeah.
It's a little bit like running a marathon, and you can't just like drink water at the end, right? Like,
right.
You gotta take little yeah. water breaks as you go, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, actually.
Because I think some of us, or certainly I'll speak for myself, you know, I have a tendency to just keep going, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just get it done, which is sometimes very effective. But
yeah,
this is something that I want to, you know, do for the long term, obviously. So making sure that there are some breaks in place there.
Yeah.
And really unplugging. And I mean, again, take my own advice. Like, I will stop scrolling. No scrolling.
Yeah.
Got to stop doing that. That's not helpful, right?
Yeah.
And really, I've had to sort of, I think this could be effective for anybody, really, but really redefine or redevelop my relationship with rest. So not just like running and then sleeping, but
mm-hmm.
that interim place, right? And rest
yeah.
usually means nature or music or silence or
yes.
whatever it is. So taking time just for myself, it doesn't have to be huge amounts of time, but it does need
yeah.
to be dedicated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that and makes total sense.
Yeah, and then spending time with the people I love. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's my antidote, so
yeah.
to speak. I
yeah.
mean, having said that, the other thing that helps me personally is I believe so strongly in the importance of the work that I'm doing, and I'm really grateful for the opportunity to support all of these amazing people.
Yeah.
That goes a long way. So it's
yeah, no,
meaningful
of course.
To me. You know?
Of course. And then when, as you see progress, that must feel so fulfilling, right? I mean,
it is.
I
it
can
is.
Only imagine.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
You're changing people's lives, so yeah.
Well, I would say I'm helping them change.
You're helping them change, yes. And that's why you're the professional and I'm not. It's so interesting that the first thing you talked about was listening to your body. It made me think about you going back to your opera days, because yep. right away you connected the body with the your health and your feelings. So
yeah. I mean, if you're not, if your body's not in alignment, you can't sing an opera.
Yeah.
So I think it's true for anything yeah. that you want to do. Yeah.
What do you think are the biggest misconceptions when it comes to seeking help and therapy?
So the misconceptions that people will share with me mm-hmm. are that somehow they've failed and they're weak. Mm. They should be able to do this themselves.
Right.
You know, and sometimes I'll make a bit of it, depending on the circumstance, I might make a joke and say, well, you know, how's your Greek? And they'll be like, what? I'm like, well, do you speak Greek? And they're like, mm-hmm. no, I mean, with the exception of the people out there who do speak Greek, obviously, right?
But
just as an example, and they'll be like, no, I don't speak Greek. I'm like, well, do you feel bad about that? And they're like, no. I'm like, well, why not? Why don't you speak Greek? And they're like, well, no one taught me. I'm like, exactly.
yeah.
Or, you know, I'll have parents say something like, well, how come I don't know this? And I said, well, are you a therapist?
Right.
I mean, no. So it is a particular skill set. And I think often, you know, I'll make a joke sometimes with people saying, it's like you've taught yourself how to play golf, mm-hmm. you know, off YouTube or whatever, and you're doing a pretty good job. And then you get to a certain point where you can keep going at this rate, or you can bring in a golf pro and really elevate your game like that. Right. So, yeah. So, and to take some of the shame out of it, right?
Yeah, because it's still there, right? You must see it a lot still. Like as much as we've moved forward, it's still there, because there's a first step of, you know, getting the help, and then I guess now there's a second step of realizing it's there's nothing wrong with it, like, you know.
No, there isn't. And you know, one of the first questions I'll ask people in a session is, especially the first session, is, you know, how are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And almost always, if they're honest, they'll tell me nervous or anxious or afraid. And I'll say, well, good.
Yeah.
That's normal. Yeah. I think so what I like to share with people, I think, is that it takes a huge amount of courage to actually approach a therapy session, because you don't know what you're doing. You don't know what to expect, that sort of thing. So that's always the first step requires strength and courage, not the other way around.
Yeah. And because therapy is not necessarily something, as we've talked about, that you do from a young age, right?
No.
But, you know, from a young age, you go to the doctor all the time. So you know exactly what to expect when you go to your doctor's office. But it's this big unknown if you've never tried therapy, right? And so, there is courage in that.
You know, if you go to a doctor because you sprained your ankle and you need a bandage, have you failed? No.
No.
Right? You get it.
Yeah, I think I do.
I do. I mean, and I guess the other thing, too, is that sometimes I think the perception can be that therapy is necessary when there's crisis. And absolutely, when there is crisis, therapy is a really great intervention. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, and I touched on this earlier, mm-hmm. I think that there are strategies and learnings, you know, just learning about self-support, what that even means. If someone had said that to me at, you know, 15, I'd been like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Right. So understanding what that means and what that means for you, these are just useful skills. You know, it's like teaching people how to take care of their teeth before they get cavities, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, no,
you know, a really sort of proactive approach. And just another way, you know, you go have a massage, or you go to a naturopath, or you go to the gym, for example, right? Just to maintain health.
Yeah.
So looking at it from that perspective as well, I think is really helpful.
And I think it is slowly going in that direction.
I think so too.
So that's great.
Yep.
I know that every patient is different, but if there was any advice you would want teenagers to take away from our conversation about mental health and therapy today, what would that be? I know it's very generalized. I don't know if something comes to mind, or is it too general?
No, it's not too general. I don't think so. I think that one of the most important things I would like teenagers to take away is to listen to themselves. Whatever that little voice is that says, this isn't right, there's something wrong, there's something, listen to that. I think that, you know, I'll speak for myself. As a kid, I think I was talked out of that stuff a lot. And I think that trusting themselves, trusting that they do know what they need, how they feel, you know, even if they can't put words to it or whatever, they are the experts, right?
Yeah. No, that's great advice. And if you had any advice to give to adults or parents, what would you want them to hear today? I know we talked about them listening. Is there anything else that comes to mind?
Yeah. I mean, so absolutely listening. And I think that to be able to listen, you need to support yourself. So I know that, yes, things are challenging for teenagers, but they are also amazingly challenging for everyone, I think, at the moment. And you're a parent trying to adult and also raise kids and probably have a job, like all the things.
Yeah.
You know, it really is such a silly analogy, but I think it's a really good one. You know, it's like putting on your own oxygen mask first on a plane, right? And I think that certainly a lot of parents that I know, myself included, have a tendency to want to focus on the kids and not myself. And I think the best thing you can do for your child is take care of yourself first, or in addition to whatever, make sure that your supports are in place so that you can be present and available to your
kids. To do the listening when the time comes. Yeah,
absolutely. No, that's... Kids don't need perfection. They're not looking for that, but they do need presence and consistency. And to do that, we need to be well supported as parents.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No, great advice. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up the podcast? I feel like you've talked about a lot, but
I know we could talk for days, right? Well, first of all, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk about this. I think it's really great, and I've really enjoyed being here with you. I think what I'd like to leave is this idea that when therapy works best, certainly from my perspective, it's a collaborative effort, right? So often people will come and say, "Oh my God, my kid needs help." Okay. And then I start working with the kid and I realize, you know, kids don't show up on their own typically, right? It is a dynamic thing. And I think we can extrapolate from the family and say that we are collectively kind of in this crisis together. Right. And whatever is happening with the teenagers is happening elsewhere, right? So to try to break down the separation between the, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, we're different people, we're different stages, that kind of thing, whatever. But what teenagers are talking about and really are shining a light on, I think, at the moment is really sort of the human condition that I think we share. So if we can come at it from a place of empathy and collaboration, and like I said, truly stepping back and listening to other people's experiences, just that in of itself is healing.
Yeah.
And you don't have to be a therapist to do that. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, that's why when you go out with friends, sometimes it feels so good. You feel in some way that is a bit of a therapy session, because sometimes that's all you need is to go out with a good friend that's going to listen, right?
Yep.
So I totally get that. Well, if listeners want to reach, well, first of all, let me just say thank you again. This has been wonderful. All my guests are wonderful. They all add value, and this has been no different. You've added so much value on the podcast. And if listeners wanted to reach out, wanted to, you know, look up your information or book an appointment, where can they find you?
Yes. Yeah, so I have a website. It's meadgestalt.com. And on there, there's all the information about me and what I do and, you know, my approach, that kind of thing. And you can either reach out to me directly or you can book a session directly from the site as well. Okay. So all my information's in one place. Give me a call, send me a text, reach out.
Yeah. All right. Great. Thank you so much, Katie.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And that's a wrap for today. Thank you all for listening. Just a reminder to please subscribe to Chatter and Laughs wherever you listen to your podcast, as it is a big help for me. If you enjoyed this episode, please let me know. You can leave a review or reach out to me directly. I always love sharing the feedback with my guests. And for those of you who might be interested in supporting or sponsoring an episode, I want to hear from you as well. That way I can give you a big shout out on the podcast. You can find me on Instagram at Chatter and Laughs and through email at Rima@chatterandlaughs.ca. Bye for now.